Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a financial strategy that, well, it feels fundamentally backward to a lot of people, short selling.
It really does. I mean, yeah. We're talking about profiting not when a company does well, but when its stock price crashes.
Exactly. It's inherently controversial. It's definitely high risk. And for most people, it's just deeply confusing.
And the source material we looked at for this, it goes beyond the finances. It asks a pretty profound ethical question. Is this globally accepted, totally legal market practice actually built on a form of deception?
And that's really our mission for this deep dive. We're going to break down the mechanics of short selling, the borrowing, the unlimited risk, and then we'll zero in on that core ethical problem.
Right. And the source frames this around these principles called naivat daat, which it's a fascinating term, translates roughly to theft of mind.
Theft of mind. So it's not about stealing money, but about stealing someone's, what, their correct understanding of a situation.
Precisely. You're deceiving them about the very nature of the transaction. And, you know, to really get why a short sale could be seen that way, we have to start with the baseline. We need to talk about what's called the long position.
Okay, so the long position.
Right.
This is the default setting for almost everyone, right? Your 401k, your Robinhood account, this is what you're doing.
It is. You buy an asset, could be a stock, gold, crypto, whatever, because you expect the price to go up.
You buy low, you sell high. Simple.
It's the intuitive way to trade. If you buy, say, 100 shares of a company, let's call it open at $10, and later you sell them at $15, that $5 difference per share is your profit.
And the key thing here, the transparent part, is you own the thing you're selling. The market sees you selling a genuine holding.
Yeah, you actually possess it. It's like the soda bottle analogy from the source. You bought 10 bottles, you own them, and when you sell them, it's a real sale of a real asset you hold.
And most of the market operates in this world.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And even within this long world, you have different kinds of players. You've got the long-term investors, the buy and hold types.
These are the people who aren't bothered by the day-to-day noise. They're looking at potential over years, not minutes.
Exactly. And the power of that strategy is just staggering. The source uses NVIDIA as an example. The stock went from, what, $18 to $180 in just 3 years.
That's 1,000% return. 1,000.
It is. I mean, compare that to maybe 4 or 5% interest in a bank. You'd need like 250 years to match that growth.
So that's why people are in the market for the long haul. But then you've got the other end of the spectrum.
You do. You have the fast movers. Day traders, for instance, they're buying and selling in the same day, trying to profit off tiny little swings.
And even faster than them are the scalpers.
Oh, the scalpers. Absolute speed demons. They're in and out of dozens, maybe hundreds of trades a day, just trying to make a few cents here and there.
But they're all still long traders. They're buying something, owning it, and then selling it.
That's the common thread. They own it. Now, let's flip that completely on its head and get into the short mechanism. This is where the idea of ownership gets, well, weird.
So if long is profiting when a stock goes up, short is profiting when it goes down.
And the huge difference is this. The short seller does not own what they're selling. They borrow it.
They borrow it. Okay, walk us through that.
So you, the short seller, go to a broker and you borrow, let's say, 100 shares of that open company. You immediately sell those borrowed shares on the market at the current price, say $10 a share. So you get $1,000 in cash right away.
But you still owe the broker the shares back, not the cash, but the actual shares.
That is the crucial detail. You owe the product.
Mm-hmm.
Your entire bet is that the stock price is going to fall.
So you wait.
You wait.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're right and the price drops to $7 a share, you then go back into the market, you buy 100 shares for $700.
And you take those shares, give them back to the broker, and the $300 difference is your profit.
You just made money on failure.
It's clever, but I can see why it feels off. And this borrowing part is what makes it so incredibly dangerous, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. When you go long, the most you can lose is what you put in, right? The stock can only go to zero.
Okay, sure.
But with short selling, your risk is, in theory, unlimited. If you shorted that stock at $10, and instead of falling, it skyrockets to $50.
You still have to buy them back.
You still have to buy them back to cover your debt.
Yeah.
So you'd spend $5,000 to cover a position that only brought you $1,000. That's a $4,000 loss. There's no ceiling on how high a stock can go.
That is terrifying. Okay, so beyond the financial risk, let's get to that philosophical problem. Why is this so controversial?
It really boils down to intent versus what the market perceives. When a regular long investor sells, the market reads that as a real economic signal. Maybe they think the company's peaked, maybe they've lost faith.
It's an authentic action.
Exactly. But the short sale, it's an artificial sale. The seller isn't actually getting out of an investment. Their one and only goal is to push the price down so they can profit from the drop.
And this is where that theft of mind, the Nivat Dot, comes in.
It is. The short sale looks to the world like an authentic sale from a real shareholder. It tricks the public into thinking a genuine owner is bailing, when in fact it's a manufactured event designed to cause the price to collapse.
The analogies and the source for this are just so good at making it clear. The Apple vendor one, for example.
Yeah, that's a great one. So a vendor normally sells apples he owns. But today, he borrows a bunch of boxes from a neighbor and starts selling them off cheap.
And everyone watching thinks, wow, the main vendor is dumping his stock. Prices must be too high. And so the market price drops.
But he never owned them. He just flooded the market to drive the price down so he could buy them back cheaper later and repay his loan. It's a completely artificial signal.
Or the car seller analogy. You advertise a car you don't actually own. People see the ad and think the supply of that used car is going up, so the value must be going down.
Right. But your goal wasn't to sell a car you owned. It was just to create the perception of more supply to erode the price, so you could then go buy one cheap to deliver to the buyer. The intent is pure price manipulation.
It's a powerful indictment. But you have to ask the question right. If everyone in the market knows this happens, is it still deception?
That is the critical question. And it brings us to the knowledge gap. For a professional trader, the deception argument is much weaker.
Because they know short selling is a thing. They know where to look.
They do. They know how to check a stock's short interest. And for you listening, short interest is just the percentage of a company's shares that have been borrowed and sold short. Professionals look at sites like Fintel or Ortex and can see exactly how much short pressure is on a stock.
So for them, it's all transparent. No deception.
For them, yes. But here's the aha moment from the source. When we look at the average person, the retail investor, the numbers are shocking.
This is the knowledge gap.
It's a huge gap. Based on market estimates, somewhere between 70 and 80% of retail investors, people managing their own money, either don't know what short selling is, or they don't get the mechanics, the borrowing, the unlimited risk.
70 to 80%. That changes the whole moral equation, doesn't it?
It completely reframes it, because if the vast majority of people in the market don't understand that a sale could be artificial, then for them, it is still a deceptive signal.
So the source argues that because most of the public is in the dark, you can't really call it a clear transaction. The risk of Nivat Dot is still very real for most people.
Precisely.
Okay, so if we have this legal strategy that relies on a function most people don't understand, how does it survive? Why is it ultimately considered permissible?
Well, the source lays out three main arguments that, taken together, justify it within our current legal and ethical framework.
And the first one puts the responsibility back on the little guy.
It does. It's the principle of learner responsibility. The idea is, if you choose to enter the capital markets, you have a responsibility to learn the basic SEC-approved rules of the game.
The SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, being the main regulator.
Correct. So if the SEC allows short selling, and you decide to trade without learning what that is, you can't really cry foul and claim you were deceived. There's a duty of due diligence on your part.
Your ignorance of the rules doesn't make the other player a cheater.
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
Your failure to understand the mechanics, that's on you.
Okay. What's the second point?
The second point is about the market's own balancing mechanism. Every single short sale has to eventually be covered.
Meaning the seller has to buy the shares back.
They must buy them back to return to the broker. And that future act of buying creates upward pressure on the stock, which naturally balances out the initial downward pressure from their sale.
And we've seen this happen in a massive way with things like the short squeeze, right? GameStop is the famous example.
The perfect example. Short sellers were forced to buy back shares at any price, which sent the stock soaring. The source even mentions a trader who made over $1 million on one of those squeezes. It proves the system has this self-correcting feature built in.
So the risk goes both ways, which I guess leads to the third argument.
It does. Mutual risk exposure. The short seller has unlimited risk. The long investor risks losing their entire investment. Since both sides are facing massive non-guaranteed risk, the claim that it's a one-sided fraud just doesn't hold up.
So to sum it up, short selling is allowed because investors are expected to know the rules, the market has a way of balancing it out, and the risk isn't just on one side of the trade.
That's the verdict. The only time it becomes truly forbidden, legally and ethically, is if the short seller does more than just sell. If they start spreading false rumors or fake financial data to drive the price down, that's illegal manipulation.
But the act itself, within the rules, is permissible.
In the absence of that extra manipulation, yes. It's an accepted, if very, very risky, part of modern finance.
What a deep dive. So we've gone from the simple long position to the incredibly risky short mechanism, and then right into that ethical minefield of Navat Dat.
And that huge investor knowledge gap. I mean, the fact that 70 to 80% of people might not understand it is, it's a wild statistic.
It really is. And the conclusion that it's okay seems to hinge on this idea that every investor is responsible for their own education.
Which is a heavy burden for most people.
It is. And that leaves us with one final provocative thought for you to take away. If the market's legal rules permit actions that confuse the vast majority of the people playing the game, does the financial system itself, or the SEC, have a bigger ethical duty to enforce transparency?
Should it be clearer? Should a trade be labeled somehow shares owned versus shares borrowed?
Exactly. A critical question to think about as more and more people enter these complex markets.
A great place to leave it. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
We'll catch you next time.